The gist of the talk will be on polarization mode dispersion, and we'll include a section where we'll discuss some of the fundamental concepts. What is polarization mode dispersion? Why is it such a problem? And discuss it in both its first order and second order manifestations. Following that, a little diversion, discussing a bit about polarization maintaining fiber. Is PMF really polarization maintaining fiber? As well, some discussion about a topological mechanism for altering the state of polarization in a fiber. A bit of a general warning about the use of patch cords when you're dealing with polarization. And then we'll wrap up with some conclusions based on the overall presentation. Well, the list is almost endless of where polarization can interact with optical fibers in different applications in fiber optics. Perhaps the most obvious and blatant example would be coherent communications, where a signal is beat at the receiver with a strong local oscillator to recover some transmitted messages. And in that case, the signal must be aligned with the polarization state of the local oscillator. In fact, this is such a major effect that real-life implementations of coherent communications generally use what's called a polarization diversity receiver, settle for some loss in overall system sensitivity to be sure that they'll always be looking at the right polarization state with the local oscillator. Mach-Zehnder modulators are example of components which are very polarization dependent. If the polarization state is not controlled going into a Mach-Zehnder modulator, used typically for external modulation of signals, this will cause a significant degradation in the performance of the device. Similarly with semiconductor optical amplifiers, also very polarization dependent. Of course, there's the interaction of the polarization dependent loss, or polarization dependent gain as the case may be, of various components with polarized light, and this produces intensity noise. In fact, also, and this is quite important for a number of WDM systems which might use interference filters tilted at slight angles in order to tune their center wavelengths, there can often be a polarization dependence to the central wavelength of bandpass filters. Overall, polarization light will interact with fiber birefringence and mode coupling to give what is called first mode order PMD. We'll discuss that in more detail. Furthermore, this first order PMD can interact with chromatic dispersion to give what's called second order PMD, a relatively poorly known but nevertheless very important effect. As well, polarization can have implications on the amplitudes of Brillouin, backscattering, four-wave mixing, and Raman amplification in long fibers. There's two basic mechanisms by which polarized light interacts with optical fiber. One is a general physical interaction, which includes birefringence and mode coupling. We'll discuss in a moment what exactly these mean. And then a second manner is through a topological interaction. Again, something that's not too well known generally by people working in the community, but a very significant effect which can in turn interact with the other physical interaction. We'll discuss this in the course of the talk. We'll move on now to what is PMD, and both in its first and second order manifestations. Polarization mode dispersion is, being a dispersion, as are all dispersions, a phenomenon which results in pulse spreading on the time axis. This pulse spreading is very much dependent on the interaction of polarized light with the inherent behavior of the optical fiber of the propagation medium. And as a consequence, it leads to intersymbol interference in digital systems and distortion in analog systems. And it is a major perhaps even the major limitation in high bandwidth long haul systems. Before really jumping into what is PMD or first order PMD, it's important that we discuss three key concepts. And if you aren't familiar with them already, if nothing else, if you leave tonight having a better idea what these three key concepts are, I think this talk will have been worth it. These are differential group delay, principal states of polarization, and input and output states of polarization. In order to illustrate these concepts, let's start with a simple case. Let's just consider, forget about an optical fiber, just a discrete wave plate and an open space beam of light. We say that the beam of light has a state of polarization defined by the orientation and the behavior of the electric field vector with time. And this in this particular case example here, the state of polarization is oriented at 45 degrees with respect to the vertical. The medium through which this pulse will propagate is characterized by a principal state of polarization, or two principal states of polarization, I should say. In the case of a simple wave plate, they're known as the fast axis and the slow axis. So state of polarization refers to light. Principal state of polarization refers to the medium. In the case of a wave plate, a pulse which is coming at 45 degrees here, the energy will be split 50-50 into the fast and slow axes. As the name suggests, the fast axis has a somewhat lower refractive index, allowing the light pulse to pass slightly faster through the thickness of the medium than the slow index, so that at the end this one pulse is split into two pulses. Unfortunately, this diagram doesn't properly indicate the amplitudes, but is split into two pulses separated by a time, delta tau, which is known as the differential group delay. So the differential group delay is the difference of propagation time of light passing through either the two principal states of polarization. This example here is for a very a time domain example, very sharp pulse in time, but it can be easily generalized to a CW input, a monochromatic light beam, and rather than having the two pulses coming out, there'll be a dephasing of the light coming out from the wave plate. But it's still the time difference, overall time delay, is the differential group delay, whether you're talking in the time in with a CW input or with a sharp pulse. Well, let's generalize this example here. Consider now many wave plates with different orientations and orders. And the order of the wave plate, as we saw in the last view graph, is what determines a digital group delay, that delta tau. So let's imagine n such wave plates, random assortment of orders, thicknesses. What's going to happen is that there's two important things to point out. One is that each interface between wave plates, there's going to be a decomposition of the light, which is, for instance, light coming through the first wave plate. We'll have principal axes vertical and horizontal in this diagram. And then the energy in each of those two axes will now be projected onto the new axes defined by the second wave plate, and so on for the third. And this projection, this interface of projection, is called mode coupling. There's a very interesting result, which is really, in my opinion, not obvious at all. Certainly, it's not something that's intuitively obvious, but no matter how complicated a collection of wave plates you could find, and I've given examples here of wave plates with linear axes. These axes can be more general. They can be These principal axes can be circular, elliptical. They can be in any possible orientation and of any type of helicity. No matter how complicated this combination, there always is a state of polarization of light coming in, which will pass through without any spreading in this combination for a given wavelength. And that's a very important point. And that state of polarization corresponds to what is called the principal state of polarization of this wavelength combination as a function of optical frequency or wavelength. So, in fact, the reason that this analogy is so important is that a single mode fiber, it can be modeled as a series of wave plates. And to give you an idea, I will come back a little bit later on to real numbers, but a simple wave plate that's a lambda over 4 wavelength, a quarter wave plate, has a digital group delay of 1.25 femtoseconds at 1550 nanometers. So we're not talking about very wave plates can of even fairly large order introduce what we might consider to be small differential group delays. But nonetheless, these group delays altogether can add up to picoseconds after a certain distance. So if you think of this fiber here as being made up of a number of wave plates, random or at least unknown orientations, unknown principal axes, is it linear, is it elliptical, many mode coupling events occurring, maybe after 1 meter, maybe after 10 meters, unknown distance, this provides an excellent model of the PMD, polarization mode dispersion behavior of a single mode fiber. We have the birefringence, we have the mode coupling, the two physical mechanisms responsible for PMD. So a little bit to recap what I just said. The long single mode fiber can be modeled as concatenation of many randomly oriented birefringent elements. The interfaces represent the mode coupling. We say that a fiber is strongly mode coupled if effectively there are many interfaces between these birefringent elements. On average, the net digital group delay increases as the square root of the length of the fiber. Okay, so this is a diffusion-like behavior. It doesn't go, if you had no mode coupling, you just had one long wave plate that was say 1,000 lambda wave plate, then you would have 5 picoseconds, for instance, of digital group delay. And if you had 2,000 lambda, you'd have 10 picoseconds. It goes linearly. But in the presence of mode coupling, it's a diffusion-like behavior, and the digital group delay increases as the square root of the length. The birefringence behavior and of the overall system from end to end is strongly dependent upon environmental factors, and this includes the orientation of the principal state of polarization for a given optical frequency. As I mentioned, you can always, for any given optical frequency, there always is a state of polarization which will match a principal state of polarization of the system, and the light will pass through unaffected. But it's very dependent upon environmental factors. The slightest perturbation can cause a shift in the principal state of polarization or in its magnitude. Here's an example. Unfortunately, it didn't show up too well in the view graph because these figures are not properly aligned, but if you can imagine them aligned vertically, left to right, of the digital group delay as a function of optical frequency. And here is a digital group delay for a 20 randomly oriented wave plates. In fact, we actually did this with what's called polarization maintaining fiber, panda fiber, where the axes were oriented in random fashion with different lengths. And this is the result from the frequency, from the optical frequency scan over a certain 30 terahertz region here. And you can see there's a huge variation in the digital group delay as a function of optical frequency. If you were to plot the density of this variation, you'd see that the probability density function has this Maxwellian form, and of the digital group delay. And by definition, and this is just a definition, the PMD is defined as the RMS value of this distribution, of this probability density function, of this varying digital group delay. It could have been some other statistical definition based on a Maxwellian, but by universal definition, it's been chosen to be this. Remember this graph here on the right, because we'll be coming back to this in a moment when we discuss to second order PMD. Another very important concept in PMD is the polarization dispersion vector. And this vector is useful for visualizing the transformation of input to output states of polarization through a long fiber. By definition, it lies along the axis of the fast principal state of polarization coming out of the fiber. I should have mentioned earlier that the principal state of polarization of a fiber at the input and the output are not generally the same. In the case of a simple wave plate, they are. But in general, if you were to find a state of polarization of a given wavelength for which light will pass undistorted through a fiber, maybe it's some funny elliptical at some state at some angle, when it comes out of the fiber undistorted, it will not be, in general, elliptical at that same angle. It will be some other state. That's called the output principal state of polarization. And the PMD1 can be expressed in terms of the RMS value of the magnitude of the polarization dispersion vector. This might all seem rather obscure at the moment, but this can be explained in terms of what's known as the Poincaré sphere. Poincaré sphere, I won't go into great detail here, but suffice it to say it's a very convenient way to represent polarization states graphically. And on such a sphere, if you treated it like the Earth, the North Pole represents a left circular polarization, South Pole right circular polarization, and along the equator are various states of linear polarization. And the polarization dispersion vector is going to have some particular orientation. In this simple example we show here, the polarization dispersion vector is aligned with the a output state of polarization corresponding to left circular polarization. And as if you started at a certain state of polarization, it would evolve in time according to this polarization dispersion vector. I'm going quite quickly on this, and but I hope it just gives you a flavor for how numerically the propagation of the polarization state during propagation through the fiber can be calculated. But these concepts are absolutely critical for moving on to what's called second order PMD. Second order PMD arises from the fact that the polarization dispersion vector has an optical frequency dependence or wavelength dependence, both in its magnitude and its orientation. This is a very important point, because if you remember back in that previous slide where we showed the variation with optical frequency of the digital group delay, there's been a common misconception in the industry, in the field, that second order PMD was just the derivative of this variation. It's not true. That's only part of the story. The derivative does play a role, but an even larger role is played by the fact that the principal states of polarization dispersion vector, change with optical frequency. And And it can be expressed mathematically in this form, following the work of Nicolas Gisin in Switzerland. And furthermore, it can be shown that in the case of strong mode coupling, the case that holds for long single mode fibers, there's a relationship between first order PMD and second order PMD that is quite rigorous. The units of PMD are normally given of second order PMD are given in picoseconds per nanometer, which happen to be the same units as chromatic dispersion. This has some significance, it'll be mentioned in a moment. It grows linearly with length, and has the effect that it causes fluctuations in the power penalty of a system. So if you think already, the power penalty is already a probability distribution based on the probability of errors occurring less often than, say, one part in 10 to the 12th of time. And that distribution itself can fluctuate, and those fluctuations are exacerbated or caused by the second order PMD. I'll show a plot in a moment of some examples of this. Second order PMD can be thought as the link between first order PMD, or standard PMD as it's usually called, and chromatic dispersion. Why is that? Well, you only have PMD, the bad effects of PMD are only present if chromatic dispersion is present, or chirp. That is to say, if you have a monochromatic unchirped beam source, the presence of chromatic dispersion will produce chirped. It will select, the chromatic dispersion has the effect that, for instance, maybe the blue side of the signal will travel a little bit faster or a little bit slower than the red side of the signal. This creates a chirp, and this chirp will grow with distance linearly. This chirp now gives a time dependence to the polarization dispersion vector. And so the, both the digital group delay and the differential group delay and the principal states of polarization will change with this frequency. As a result, this will cause a time-dependent delay and pulse spreading. So the basic message is that second-order PMD is an effect which occurs in the presence of chromatic dispersion, but fundamentally it is really chirp which interacts with second-order PMD to cause additional pulse spreading.
So you need chirp and PMD to get this pulse spreading?
Yep. Or chromatic dispersion.
Right.
Chromatic dispersion and non-chirp. Chromatic dispersion will make chirp.
Right.
Yeah. So it's. The PMD-induced power penalty, if we just consider PMD in general, typically, as I mentioned, power penalties are calculated in terms of probability distributions, where maybe we want to know at what power level and at a given digital bit rate or a bit period, do we have a probability of less than 10 to the minus 12 or some particular value for a digital 1 to be read as a 0 or reverse. And the power penalty means that as we add this PMD overall to the system, but how much do we have to add to the overall system power to compensate for this additional this increase that the wing in the wing that the error will go up to some specified burr. And you see that for 10 gigabits per second here, this goes up quite quickly. So for OC192 systems, anything more than about 20 to 40 picoseconds of overall PMD in a system will cause serious, could start to have an effect. I'm not necessarily saying it's going to cause serious problems, because there could be quite a bit of system margin, but it starts to have some noticeable effect. For 5 gigabits per second and 2.5 gigabits per second, there's virtually no effect until PMD values reach 40, 60, or even 80 picoseconds. But since PMD, one goes as, is a diffusion-like process in the way that it grows, goes as the square root of L, this can actually correspond to 40 picoseconds can actually correspond for a fiber that has a modest PMD of well under a picosecond per square root of kilometer can correspond to quite significant distances, hundreds of kilometers before serious trouble starts to arise. However, the situation has completely changed now when there's second-order dispersion, a second-order PMD starts to enter. Because in the presence of second-order PMD, the fluctuations of this power penalty can be significantly increased. For instance, if there's overall chromatic dispersion of, say, 1,000 picoseconds per nanometer, which corresponds to just 60 kilometers of standard non-dispersion shifted single mode fiber, the fluctuations are increased by a factor of two. Factor two is no big deal, you say. Factor two makes an immense difference in when you're looking into the extreme wings of a distribution. If a fluctuation is increased by, if you have a fluctuation increasing temporarily the distribution by a factor of two, that has an immense effect on the part cut off in the error function at the far end. So the PMD2 can cause a significant degradation of system performance in the presence of chromatic dispersion, or chirp, if the overall PMD1 is large. So it's a trade-off between the two. You could have lots of chromatic dispersion, but if you had no PMD, well, you'd have chromatic dispersion problems, of course, but the PMD itself obviously would not play a role. If you had no chromatic dispersion and you had PMD, the PMD1 would have the standard limitations that are well known, but PMD2 would not play a role. But if you have the two, all of a sudden things get much worse than considering them individually. Some rules of thumb here. Could PMD be a problem in your system? It's as a general rule, PMD is only a problem at bit rates greater than about 10 gigabits per second, about 10 times less that for analog systems, about a gigahertz bandwidth for analog system. If a normal dispersion shifted fiber is used, but it can become a problem in terms of its interaction with second-order PMD, if for greater than 500 picoseconds per nanometer overall dispersion, which corresponds to only 30 kilometers of fiber if you don't use dispersion-shifted fiber. The good news, proper management of your chromatic dispersion should virtually eliminate any deleterious second-order PMD effects. In fact, we'll go one step further to say all the problems that second-order PMD can give, which can be very significant, can go sort of schlumpf. You get rid of them all immediately. You just put in a dispersion compensator. It's a linear system. So whether you distribute your chromatic dispersion is a linear phenomenon. You can completely eliminate one end. But similarly, the second order PMD, despite it seemingly very complex and it is very stochastic process, everything just sort of all cancels out if you eliminate the overall system CD. However, word of warning here. Oops, well, I seem to be missing a view graph, but verbally just mentioned that there is an outstanding question which has to do with Bragg grating-based dispersion compensators. At the Optical Fiber Measurement Conference this year, the group of Bonino in Italy showed that there can be significant PMD in Bragg dispersion compensators. And this PMD does not follow the same, is a deterministic PMD. and is also can be caused partially by stitching errors in the Bragg gratings. And as a result, the relationship between first order and second order PMD, which rigorously holds for strong mode coupling and single mode fibers, no longer holds necessarily. And so it may well be that dispersion compensators, while they may perfectly well eliminate chromatic dispersion, the effects of second order dispersion, second order polarization mode dispersion, may still be there. And this is an outstanding question that remains to be resolved. Okay, you can relax now. The hard part's over. We'll just rush to the end here with some sort of more fun things. Discuss a little bit about polarization maintaining fiber. Polarization maintaining fiber is a fiber where a large intrinsic birefringence has been applied internally in the fiber via stressed elements in the preform before the fiber is drawn. It's frequently called high bi fiber. Here's an example of a type of polarization maintaining fiber, is commercially known as panda fiber. Where you see the stress rods, the core, typically about 9 microns, and then the overall diameter, about 125 microns. And the key to polarization maintaining fiber is that there's no transfer of energy, no mode coupling, in other words, of energy that is initially launched along the slow axis or the fast axis. At least in principle, but in practice it's also quite true. Oops, how come I got two of these? Here we go. And we define something called the beat length, which is the length over which light at a given wavelength traveling along the fast axis of a fiber will accumulate 1 lambda of phase lead over light traveling along the slow axis. What that means is if somehow you were to sample along the fiber, for instance, light that is impinging on the input of the fiber at 45 degrees with respect to the fast and slow axis, if you were to sample in this polarization maintaining fiber at different points, it would start out 45 degrees, then turn elliptical, maybe in this orientation, then circular, elliptical, linear, go through a complete cycle, come back 45 degrees. This period through which the light will be transformed through complete cycle of polarization states is known as the beat length. It's typically about 3 millimeters in polarization maintaining fiber. Notice, keeping in mind the previous view graph where we said that energy is not transferred, energy initially launched in the fast and slow axis is not transferred. At any point for any of these states of polarization, you take the component along the fast axis, component along the slow axis, the energy is conserved. There's no, you couldn't have this, for instance, this state here rotating in this angle because that would not, there would have to be mode coupling for that to happen. But an important point here is that polarization maintaining fiber then, you will have a polarization maintaining condition when you launch all the energy along either the fast axis or the slow axis, and the light will maintain there. And that is, if you launch along the fast axis, it will stay always linearly polarized, in this case vertical the whole way, slow axis, horizontal the whole way. So polarization maintaining fiber is really a misnomer. It is only polarization maintaining for two, really, let's face it, very special cases. Furthermore, in practice, the polarization maintaining fiber, there's always a small amount of crosstalk, perhaps 30 dB, minus 30 dB of crosstalk after a meter of fiber. And after a long distance, this crosstalk will start to accumulate. And so polarization maintaining fiber does not even very well preserve the degree of polarization for very long lengths. It's quite good. I don't want to give the impression it doesn't work, but it compared to standard good quality telecom grade single mode fiber, the fiber light will become depolarized more quickly in polarization maintaining fiber than it will in standard fiber. Oops. Okay, moving on to the next section here. Topological mechanism for altering state of polarization in fiber. If these are all messed up. Let's run into this trick. There we go. Sorry. Here's an old experimentalist trick that's been used for years by optical scientists in the lab long before the day of fiber optics. If you take three mirrors, consider them at the corners of a cube, oriented at 45 degrees. Light which comes in initially vertically polarized, reflects off a mirror, hits this mirror here at an angle such that it will now follow this corner of the cube, and then hits this other mirror, you'll notice that the light has been transformed from vertical polarization to horizontal polarization. Well, big deal, you say. It's just simple boundary conditions of Maxwell's equations. It's true. It is. And it's just sort of interesting because you can, of course, just extend this and take the same mirror, and now you change the angle a little bit so that the light beam comes off at 40 degrees rather than 90 degrees. This angle here is now 140 rather than 90. And now the light beam, which was originally vertical, will come out linearly polarized 40. In fact, if this had been elliptical, the semi-major axis of the elliptical light would have been rotated by 40 degrees. It's a geometrical effect. And in the limit, if this angle becomes 90 degrees, and in fact, I've taken away the third mirror because it would just be a grazing incidence, but I can imagine it's not even there. Vertical light, if it stays in the same plane, is not changed. So what has happened here is as long as we've kept in the same plane, the path of the light, the light experiences no change in state of polarization as a result of its path. When you come out of the plane, it will be rotated by amount determined by this deviation from out of being inside the plane. And this has an effect on the semi-major axis of the light. There was a very exciting development in the 1980s by a professor at the University of Bristol, Michael Berry, who pointed out that in the quantum mechanical formulations, the original formulation of quantum mechanics by great scientists such as Born and Dirac, there was an overall phase factor that they had overlooked, a phase factor which showed up under certain special conditions. And in fact, he showed that this phase factor is a very general phenomenon which occurs whenever any wave function, be it light, quantum mechanical wave packet, etc., follows a certain topological path. And it was soon recognized that this phase function is what is underlying things like that simple mirror example, what has a consequence known as the Harrannoff-Bohm effect, where charged particles pass through a double slit experiment in the presence of a magnetic field and experience strange phase shifts, has consequences in molecular spectroscopy where mysterious forbidden bands, which nobody could quite explain where they came from, now were clearly elucidated. And even simple things like that mirror, which can be easily explained by Maxwell's equations, but it can also be looked on as something a little bit more broader in its generality. And Berry suggested that a way to test this explicitly, that if what he said was true, that light in an optical fiber should experience a phase shift that would be a direct consequence of this phase. And indeed, if you take an optical fiber, you bend it, not too sharply here, you keep it, I've shown it a bit of a sharp bend on this diagram, but if you keep it in this plane, come up, you go gently on this plane, and then into this plane, and you launch light, you'll find that the angle is in fact rotated by theta. Well, let me go back. I'm cheating a little bit. That's for a non-birefringent fiber. Of course, no non-birefringent fiber doesn't really exist. And so what you do is you change this angle theta and you look at the difference of this change in the semi-major axis. And this is a very real effect. I've tried this myself. I got some fiber that had a very low birefringence. In fact, it had a circular birefringence, so the effect on the linear light wasn't that significant. But fiber that had a very small birefringence made a nulling or a reference at some value of theta and changed, and within 1 or 2 degrees, within measurement error, from 0 to about 130 degrees, the state of polarization rotated in the correct manner. Again, it's not something that is fundamentally surprising. You could do a brute force finite element integration of Maxwell's equation all the way along the fiber, and the right result will come out. It's just that this is a manifestation of the Berry phase, a more general physical, a topological phase, because it has to do with the path, topological path that the wave function, that is the light, takes. Well, where can we sort of pull together these concepts of birefringence, mode coupling, geometric phase? Well, a good example would be the standard patch cord used in fiber optics, connecting up some instrument, a source to a detector or to a polarization-dependent device. If we were to take 1 meter of standard single-mode fiber, patch cord. Is the state of polarization launched into the input, is it going to be preserved coming out? In general, the answer is certainly no. Why? We discussed earlier, this even 1 meter of standard fiber is generally well modeled by two or three low-order wave plates, giving a total of perhaps 4 or 5 femtoseconds of PMD. The orientation of the between these wave plates, the mode coupling, is not known. And furthermore, if this patch cord sways in the breeze here, moves out of this plane, there'll be a topological phase introduced, which, when interacting with these interfaces between the mode coupling interfaces between making up this fiber, will completely change the state of polarization in some way that will be much more complex in general than simply a rotation of the state of polarization. If the fiber is extremely low birefringence, like that fiber that I mentioned in the previous example, where I did the experiment, which in fact I had removed all the acrylic coating, it was completely bare, it was extremely fragile, and a very special fiber. This effect, you might not see that much change in the state of polarization other than that due to the topological effect. But in general, a patch cord will be strongly affected by those three phenomena, birefringence, mode coupling, and topological, and geometric phase. Just summarizing what I had mentioned. So as a rule of thumb, be very wary of patch cords swaying in the breeze on instruments. Now we come to the conclusions here. This might have seemed like a bit of a rambling talk, talking many different subjects, but I think we can sort of bring it all together now. What can we say about single mode fiber and its interaction with polarization? Well, single mode fiber is not really single mode. There are axes, principal states of polarization, which mean that light traveling along one state of polarization will behave differently than light traveling with another orthogonal state of polarization. PMD is practically impossible to eliminate from real systems. It must be considered on a statistical basis, however, it doesn't really become important until you get up to about 10 gigabits per second in long-haul systems. The PMD and chromatic dispersion interact via second-order PMD, and this is a very statistical process, which can introduce large fluctuations in observed bit errors. In fact, it frequently happens that people will be running bit error tests on systems under a condition that they think is error-free, that they think they have a good safety margin or a good half dB, 1 dB above what they think they need to be error-free. They'll run the system for a week at a time at 10 gigabits per second, no problem, not a single error. Then all of a sudden, a burst of errors. Go away, keep on going. They'll search the whole system. They'll find no cause for these errors. And frequently what happens, people will just say, well, unexplainable lightning bolt somewhere or some power glitch, or they'll just throw up their hands and say, well, we won't count that data, we have no explanation. But in fact, very frequently, it could well be second order PMD because of its effects causing these huge fluctuations it can cause in the mean error penalty. Next note of conclusion, birefringent mode coupling and geometric phase are the main causes of state of polarization in a fiber. And the other is, there is no such thing as true polarization maintaining fiber. I hope with this little bit of a rambling talk here on a number of subjects, I hope I've helped to give you a few ideas on some of the very special interactions that can occur in single mode fiber with polarization. Thank you very much.
Hi. So does that mean there's no point ever trying to go to 40 gigabits per second on a single wavelength?
If your chromatic dispersion is under control, then the fact that you have 40 gigabits per second is strictly a problem of first order PMD, and that is 40 gigabits per second is getting marginal. But if your length, it depends on your link. Obviously, if it's a 200 kilometer link, then you're going to have really good fiber that's been well cabled in order to go over such long distances. But one thing I should have pointed out in the talk is about an interesting effect happened about phenomena happened about 5 years ago. People were noticing they'd have this great fiber. They would make it just so perfectly drawn without any defects, and it would give pretty crappy PMD. And then when they cabled it, all of a sudden it would get all of a sudden much better. And that's because they were introducing, through the cabling, a poor cabling process, they were introducing mode coupling, as if they had taken these wave plates and they rotated them the length of the fiber. All of a sudden, the PMD went down because now there was much more mixing, and the PMD, which increases as L during a single wave plate and a square root of L for a combination of wave plates, will more quickly go into the square root of L regime, and the overall PMD lowered. So If you use new fibers today are made by twisting as the fiber is drawn from the preform to deliberately induce about every meter a mode coupling event. And so some of the new fibers today have tremendously good PMD. And so it's not at all out of the question going to 40 gigabits for long haul systems. Oh, Vishen.
Can you comment on the soliton behavior, the PMD behavior for soliton?
Oh, I'm sorry, I really don't know. I'm sorry, I don't know. That's
Okay. You mentioned the effect on stimulated virulence happening forward mixing and drum certainly it has something to do with nonlinearities. So can you comment on that?
Yeah, the earlier when I mentioned about the effect of polarization on stimulated Brillouin, for example, it turns out, and Raman also, it's not like coherent communications where if the state of polarization were incorrect, the signal can go literally to zero, or the cross-section for detection can go literally to zero. With Brillouin and with Raman, there is a factor which I think varies something like from 1 to 2 when you do the detailed calculations as to how significant the for instance, the Brillouin backscattering will be depending on how the polarization state of the light you launch. It doesn't have a dramatic effect, but it does have some effect having to do with the interaction between the reflected traveling bright grating with the light and how this can coherently add. But the details of that I'm not too familiar with exactly how the polarization enters into that. The second order PMD penalty showed there was as a function of chromatic dispersion, picoseconds per nanometer. But yeah, if there's a chirp, as I mentioned, fundamentally the chromatic dispersion, fundamentally it's the PMD interacting with the chirp that causes second-order PMD. The chromatic dispersion just happens to have the effect that it will take a otherwise unchirped signal and make it chirped because the blue part of the signal will lag the red part of the signal. But so this could be re-expressed effectively as a chirp. The dispersion picoseconds per nanometer could be re-expressed effectively as a chirp, and the presence of a chirp and chromatic dispersion, it's like a coordinate transformation. You've added some additional, it will just be some sort of multiplicative factor. It's shown in a paper that we've submitted for publication on this effect, how the coordinate transformation of chirp plus dispersion chromatic dispersion will give just an effectively larger chromatic dispersion. If it compensates the chromatic dispersion, you're fine. You're fine. It's a linear system, and it will. It doesn't seem very physical, or it's hard to when you've got such a stochastical process. It's hard to believe everything sort of undoes itself and comes back together. But it turns out that if as long as the chromatic dispersion is correctly compensated, the second-order PMD should go away. Where there's uncertainty is when you compensate by a means that no longer preserves, that has a very deterministic behavior, like a Bragg grating. There's an uncertainty. Maybe it's fine, but it's a research area that needs to be explored. It's a very interesting area. Yes.
If you are able to measure the PMD in a cable, long cable, you have to measure it a long time to be sure that your system is error-free?
Yes, that's a very good point. The PMD can be very sensitive to environmental factors. There's two ways to measure the PMD. One is to have a single wavelength and sit there for long time, what goes through temperature cycling, day, night, winter, summer, all possible conditions, and then plot how the differential group delay changes, and then take the root mean square value of that. It turns out equivalent to that, rigorously equivalent to that, is to take a wavelength scan from gamma rays to radio waves, okay, ideally. And if you take that all the full wavelength spectrum and you plot the variation, that will also be equivalent to waiting an infinitely long time for all possible variations to happen. And so in practice, what people do is they scan either a laser over a wide range, or, as the case of a piece of X-FLO equipment which we're selling right now, we use a wide broadband source, a lead source, that will take a large slice of the spectrum, about 150 to 100 nanometer slice of the spectrum, and will give a good idea of what you could expect if you really could take the full 200 tera, or the full electromagnetic spectrum behavior of the fiber. So I guess to get back to your question, the larger the span you take in wavelength, the less time you need to take a average of measurement. So in the case of the X-FLO equipment where we use 50 nanometer wide pulse, we recommend to the people to take about 10 measurements and average them. And that will give a high probability that the PMD measured will be accurate. Yes?
There's a fiber made by 3M called the polarizing fiber. And it supports polarization, and the other one is just permeated in the title.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you worked with this fiber?
I worked with it a bit, and that's a very good point.
Would it solve these problems that you see in the...
The problem is with all those fibers, okay, they actually have tremendous use for things like sensors and for short distances. Maybe you want to use them in a fiber laser or some device that you're making. But when you're starting to talk about long distances and for telecommunications, we're talking kilometers or hundreds of kilometers, then small little effects, small defects, like with the polarization maintaining fiber, the crosstalk, or in the case of the inherent loss, the attenuation because of other compromises that have been made where the mode field diameter for one polarization state is just slightly larger than that required for proper guiding. These type of compromises start to add up. The imperfections add up. And for practical purposes, kilometers of this fiber is not very useful for telecom. Yeah. But it is a... Oh yeah. Well, polarization maintaining fiber, for instance, is very expensive, but I don't think it should be inherently expensive. It's expensive because that's what the market will bear, and it's also the best fiber, which is there's a two or three really nice fiber designs are patented, and the companies that make them don't generally give licenses, so they can charge almost what they want. But fundamentally, I don't see any reason why polarization maintaining fiber couldn't be almost the same cost as standard single mode fiber, about 5 cents a meter in large quantities. Okay, well, once again, thank you very much, and I'd be happy to talk to you privately if you have any other questions.